White Aryan Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance calling. This is the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network. Your host for today's show is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy. So get a spot of tea, sit down and relax, because it's time for another show on the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network.
I say, what would I do without the ADL? I mean, you know, they write long, long things about this Metzger boy. He's terrible. SBLC, they don't write so much about me because they're sort of caught in a bad situation. I'm supposed to have been destroyed.
Yes, yeah.
So they can't talk too much about Tom Metzger. And, you know, Simon Wiesenthal Center, they talk quite a bit. But,
yeah, I can't think of the author of the book on skinheads who literally said that about people.
The one from Portland, the cop? No. Or do you mean that?
No, he's at some school in Indiana, and he wrote a book on skinheads.
Oh.
But in there, he wrote that essentially that war had been destroyed. All the propaganda and talking about Southern Poverty Law Center and their court case against you.
Yeah, the right wing spread that too, all over the place. Okay. I think I'd sort of rather have it that way. But I don't think the government thinks that way.
No, I don't think so.
Not according to some of the things they write.
Yeah.
Which would you rather have? Some guy with a compound where everything is seen, or some guy with no compound where nothing is seen?
That reminds me, with the LA court case, I saw the two tapes on that.
Yeah.
Now, in that case, Silva was not a part of that particular case then. What happened with Silva?
Silva, you know, ended up, in fact, that case triggered him into joining the order.
Okay.
See, our enemies.
Did he come out off scot free?
He lives right here in Fallbrook right now. No, he went to jail for 10 years.
Well, for the order, but I'm talking about for the fire burning or whatever they wanted to call that, in which you were found guilty of the misdemeanor, but they didn't find you guilty.
Yeah.
Beyond that.
But by the time that came around, he was gone.
Oh, okay. Okay.
That's what triggered him. You know, what I keep saying, if you want to protect the public, you do things differently. Because when you come down in an unjust manner on someone, they're more likely to go bananas on you. And that, so Frank joined the order. You know, he said, oh, Tom, I got this deal up north, and they're going to put me to work on a ranch, and they're going to give us vehicles, and the guy's got money, he's going to support us, and everything. I said, great, Frank. And they sold out, and him and his wife and daughter moved up there. Well, I didn't know if they were joining this order group.
Okay.
And so then they went out and did their thing. And
so actually, while all this legal stuff was going on, because the tape was recorded, what, in 94?
I forget exactly where the...
Frank,
I'm pretty sure Frank had just... Or maybe Frank stayed in the municipal court. You know, I told Butler, we have to turn this into a felony. And my attorney said I was crazy, and everybody else. And I said, no, we're not going to get any kind of protection unless we get up in Superior Court. We're only charged with a misdemeanor. You know, that thing went on for about 9 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was because that I said, no, we want a felony. And the judge, nobody has, because you can do that. But it put us in Superior Court, which gave us a lot more protection. My gamble was a good gamble, but we didn't win, but I think we limited our problems. You know. the whole 45 days in jail with just that judge's smart-ass way of, I put Metzger in jail. They would never put anybody else in jail for what he got me for.
Yeah, okay.
Burning.
Because even though they found you guilty of a misdemeanor, then you were sentenced to jail.
And probation.
Okay. See, now, at the end of the tape, it was like it kind of cut off quickly, and I didn't hear a sentence. But I figured this was the one in which you probably were sentenced. And then did they let you go when your wife died? Was there something?
They let me out early. I was in there 45 days. I think it was supposed to be 6 months, which I would have been out not too much longer. And you don't do the whole 6 months. But they did let me out, I don't think because of great compassion. I think they see a backlash, backfiring on them. So, but... Are they just doing practice runs or what? Anyhow, I got them together right after it happened. We were out on bail over at Frank Silva's house in the valley. I said, boys, and I had my paralegal man with me, and I said, we got to fight this all the way. Now, nobody plead out. We could all plead out. It had been a simple deal, you know. But we didn't plead out, and I held them together. But Butler says... Well, I can't come down here to these trials. And my paralegal guy says, well, you better be prepared to, or they're coming to get you, you know. But anyhow, when we raised it to felony, they stayed in the municipal court.
Okay.
And I think Frank stayed with them. And the hard noses, we went on to felony superior court. And then it went on for years more. You know, it was tossed out of court and it was brought back. And Ira Reiner.
Yeah, because you made the remark that it had been tossed out, and then the judge was real upset and had to explain to jury why it had come back.
Been tossed out at least twice. You know, that case cost them, it must have cost $1 million. Because we had 8 or 9 attorneys free. My Jewish attorney, he was attacked by the JDL. He had a nice Corvette in the parking area, and they keyed his car and everything, you know, at Irv Rubin and JDL. Anyhow, it was a crazy case because the law was burning, not surplus, but material without a permit. Not surplus material, but garbage, not a permit. That went back to the 50s or 60s when they were trying to cut smog down in L.A. It was about burning garbage behind your house, an incinerator. And it had been raining for 24 hours, heavy. There was no chance of any fire. It was all just a setup deal. And I wasn't even near the cross. I'd had nothing to do with that cross.
They showed you in the distance.
I'd been out of the Klan for 5 years, let's see. 83, about 3 years. And usually all your life.
Yeah.
And 200,000 prisoners get out of prison a year in this country. And they're all pissed off. So, does that help the system? I don't think so.
Yeah. And then the other thing you were saying in the McVeigh tape is that a number get out of the military.
And they're pissed.
And they're not happy either.
Like McVeigh.
You know.
Yeah. So, it's interesting how the governments always create their own enemies.
Yeah.
Like I think I told you before, if the government didn't want me, they shouldn't have created me. Because every step of the way that has made me more radical was after each time I was unjustly persecuted and prosecuted. Not for something I did, but for something that was lied about. Each time, if you follow my evolution, you can see it. Each time I started out as a little right-wing conservative, worried about communism. To the point when they had the Olympics in L.A. and they were yapping about the Russians, I said, hey, give me 100,000 Russians, white Russians and take these blacks over to Russia, man, I'll trade you any day. You know, that's a lot different than what I was saying in 64.
See, this is one of the things I guess I'm trying to argue with the sociology. Ferber did her stuff, he was looking and saying, you know, an essentialist argument that is socially constructed. But people are very aware, you know, of the social dynamics that are going on as well. It's not simply just a look at human nature and that, but I think it kind of gets lost in what she sees as the main tactic of the movement.
Yeah, she probably does like mostly oversimplify a more complex situation.
Yeah.
I know the right wing does that too. And I'm one of the few guys that boldly gets out there, at least on the internet, and says the way I think it is and revises history a little bit and attacks the sacred cows and all that. And I don't think most of the leaders do that. I know they don't.
Paganism is a way, though, to maybe drum more people into the movement?
I think it's a way to put a little more backbone back into the white man and woman. Okay. Because of its very nature, it's not passive like Christianity. You know, it's not a slave religion like Christianity. Paganism is, you know, for conquering and taking care of the problem. That covers a wide variety of paganism. You got passive pagans, I guess, too. And just hug trees, you know. I like to hug a tree. Now, do you ever go in the woods? I'm not kidding. Did you ever go in the woods and hug a tree? It feels good. And I can't say why, but I have done that, and it feels good. There's something, it's almost like it's an antenna or something, you know.
All right. Are you referred to as sort of an ecological racist? And do you kind of...
Well, some have, yeah, environmentalists, but not to the extreme, you know. I believe in, conservation. Environmentalist... maybe it appears to be a little more radical, somewhere in between there, I guess. I don't believe in environmentalism to the point where it becomes ridiculous. I believe that there are species that are going to come and go on the earth, small animals and things. We can't bring the whole advance of society to a halt over a very simple little minor thing. But on the other hand, I don't see that we should be going out of our way to kill whales and things like that either, you know. There's a lot of people need killing more than whales. No, I didn't say that.
So overall, in terms of describing the race, you'd prefer to use the term Aryan race.
Well, you know, white's good, and it's really more recognizable to say white. And I use the term Aryan as in Sanskrit meaning nobility. That means a certain section of white people that have been willing to give it all and are willing to keep giving it all for the race. And more than a physical Aryan that can be argued, you know, I don't like to get into those arguments. I even get arguments from these guys from India wanting to go way back into history and argue who's an Aryan, who's not an Aryan. So then I say, okay, well, let's say white. But also, when I changed from white American resistance to white Aryan resistance, in a way it was a little devilish because I knew what it would cause. It caused a more extreme reaction. And I've always found if you want to get your foot in the door, sometimes you have to yell a little louder and and then you can talk about other things. So they come at you, screaming at you, and say, "No, wait a minute, let's talk this over," which I do all the time on the internet. And a lot of times, at least they go away with a different understanding, and many times agreeing. But the but that red flag of Arius, wow! So, a little bit of showbiz too, you know.
Yeah, yeah. You use the term then, Arian values?
Yeah, I probably have at one time or another.
What would you see sort of as key values then, either to the race or to Arians?
The key values.
They kind of separate them off. I guess where I'm going is, why is it so important?
Sidetrack evolution altogether. You know, I don't see a real future in making a tree a hippopotamus. You know, I like the tree. They've been around for a long time, and it might not even turn out to be a hippopotamus. It might end up being a pig. I mean, you know, in other words, it's a natural tradition. And an example of choice too, that people have chose to be among their own. And also, I'm not sure where in the hell we did come from. We may not be from this planet. That's an argument around, you know. Our race may have come here from somewhere else. I don't know. That I listened to all the arguments and I said, that's interesting. There's one that the guys did on the Egyptian pyramids and showed the triangulation between them and the area of Orion and how they line up with the pyramid. How they're lined up and all that is really interesting. I just don't know.
Do you think whites or Arians have a special set of values?
Not necessarily values. I think values can come in all races. I mean, the core values of honor, loyalty, tradition. Surely they're in the Asian race. Maybe even stronger than the Aryan race. The black race has it too, but you know, they just have a problem organizing. Somebody else to do, they got to do the organizing. They're practicing. This is their practicing the taxi. I think it's in their genius that is what separates an invention. The ability to deal with abstracts and generally, the Asians are more better at copying and improving, but not so much as initial invention. Almost everything the Japanese ship back to our people. And I think that is a very strong separation that could put us into the stars faster than any other race. And we have mastered the at least in the past, of the great ability of organization. When blacks are poor organizers. And the Japanese being very much similar to the West, are good organizers too, because they took on the logic and thinking of a lot of the Western people. And probably they were pioneered, in at least in the northern part of Japan, by Aryans. That Amu or Anu tribe that was tall and white in northern Japan. So there's something there too, that probably from Alexander's time.
The following is a speech given by Tom Metzger, and this was a ceremony commemorating the 20th anniversary of the assassination and martyrdom of Robert Matthews. It took place on Whidbey Island at the property at which the assassination took place. Here we go.
And what he wanted to do, he had a problem. He came from a working class background, and he was a lot like me in some ways. He got into conservative politics just like I did. And he tried all these things like I did, all the third parties, all the groups. He went through the John Birch Society. I spent about 9 years in the John Birch Society. But as he said in his tape, he began to see we were losing on all fronts. So he joined a couple of racial membership organizations. Many of these organizations had good intentions, and some of them still do, but the fact remains that you're never going to beat your enemy by simply trying to educate the masses. There has to be a spark for revolutionary activity. Bob Matthews decided that he would be the first one out of the chute, although he was actually second, because Joe Tomasi with the National Socialist Liberation Front had started a similar group in Southern California years before. He did a lot of activity around L.A., busting up the Reds and all that kind of stuff. But Bob raised the price of poker and started the order. And Bob was doing really good. He was a worker, he was a rancher, and he was really doing good at bringing the right kind of people together. And the reason he brought them together was the right wing was not furnishing the funds to bankroll any kind of real revolutionary activity in this country. You know how it is to get money out of these people on the right. I've disowned the right. I no longer have been in the right for a long time, and I'm never going back. He was discouraged because all he heard was always talking and no real intelligent action. So he struck out against the system. He was doing real well until they made one little mistake. He wanted to recruit more people in the order. And that was one mistake he made. Bob Matthews was a trusting kind of guy. He really was a likable person. And he trusted too many people. The hardcore he started out with were good men. But then he reached out and recruited some people that weren't good men, or were just in it for the money. Like Tom Martinez, who's still walking the streets. snitch him off. And also, another person that we've been attempting to identify accurately for many years, for 20 years, the order members and a lot of us, that was the informant on this island who made the telephone call that caused them to find Bob. There's a little bit of disagreement on who that was, but we'll gradually find out for sure. And make one thing sure, that a lot of people got away with what they did of informing against the order and so forth for a while, even 20 years. But we never have forgotten them. And we'd like to know where they're at. Because someday, somehow, some way, they're going to walk out of the front of the house and they're going to be on candid camera. It's time, brother. You had 20 years. It's all over. There's a lot of secrets of the order that will never be known. And there's even secrets that I'll never tell. But I want to tell you, Bob Matthews was really heading places. He had things wired together much bigger than you'll ever know. But he came to an end before he could put all this together. Now remember also that almost the entire right wing in this country disavowed Bob Matthews and the order. A lot of them are the same leaders who now say, talk how great Bob Matthews was. But at the time, the only people who backed Bob Matthews and the order were Robert Miles of the Mountain Churches, Pastor Butler, and myself. There was no other people of any major stature that supported him or would not apologize for what they did. Some of these leaders actively worked to betray Bob Matthews. One went to the CIA and complained that this guy, that he was an agent because he was trying to recruit some new men down south. And of course that didn't help the guys stay secret. I want you to always remember that, because back in the old days when nobody was standing up and not apologizing for anything of the order, a few of us were supporting the order, and we always did. And he was a real prototype, because, like I said, he was a working man. He was a rancher. He was a good American, a good white American. I don't think you could find anybody who was more white American than Bob Matthews. And very patriotic in his way. I keep hammered against the right wing because we can't go any farther with the right wing. The right wing has become the enemy. Now, if you consider yourself a right-winger and not a revolutionary activist or a pan-Aryanist, I'm sorry. The right wing and the conservative movement, you've seen what they have done once they got power. There is bad or worse than the other side. At least the left is against the war in Iraq. At least the left is for the ecology. At least the left is, a lot of them are for the working guys, and they don't want the corporations sending your jobs out of the country. So over a period of time, I find myself adopting more positions out of some of the left than I do the right. The right is totally bankrupt. We get no support from the right. They'll develop little groups where you can sit around and drink coffee and eat donuts, but they're never going to go anywhere. And they're full of informants. I consider Bob Matthews to be the first of the lone wolves, which you know what I say about, I support the concept of lone wolves and cell. Bob Matthews was the embodiment of that as a lone wolf, and then he developed a cell. Now, if he had developed cells in different parts of the country that were autonomous, that thing could have started moving forward very well. But by bringing more people into one cell that he did not have control or didn't know much about, that was his undoing. We learn the hard way, and I hope we learn and change things, and just have a few friends in a cell. Don't have a cell that's too big. Oh, you can get together like this, but your cell, you know, like they say, what a friend is. I say, you know what a friend is? That's a person who'll take a bullet for you. How many friends do you have? That's the kind of people you got to have in a cell, or operate totally as a lone wolf. And we've advocated for 20 years or better to infiltrate. Don't wear your symbols all over town or on the job or anything like that. If you need be, pretend to be the enemy. If you need to be on the job, pretend you're a liberal. Because we are a marginalized, small percentage of the public. And the only way you can operate when you're a revolutionary outfit and you're marginalized is to infiltrate and tread water until you can get power, or the government loses power. This government is losing power every day. That's why it's acting so strangely, does strange things, lashing out, and, you know, this Iraq deal, all this stuff. Maybe they'll go into Iran next. It's out of control. And to me, it's like a snake eating its own tail, and I'm happy for that. Everything we should be against is in Washington and the corporations. The transnational corporations, of which the left understand completely, are what shipped all the jobs to China, what shipped the industry to China, Red China. And wasn't it the Republicans who went to China first, Nixon and all those people? The Democrats didn't do that, and I'm not saying we like the Democrats. It's the stockholders and these giant corporations and big families of rich in this country, the rich elite, that run the show, and they run the politicians. And see, when you see a candidate running for office, his wife's got $9 billion, and you see, what was that little twerp from Texas that run? He had $10 billion. How can we identify with people like that? The enemy. Now here's where you can get down with the left wing and talk and pick out the things you agree on and just not yell too much about what you don't agree on until you sort of get them listening to you. Because there's a lot of people on the left that are very sharp, and if we can get them into the race thing, they've got all the rest. A lot of them are highly educated, more highly educated than the average one of us. That was something the racist cause didn't understand for years. And I've been condemned by the right wing for preaching what I preach. But I know I'm right, and I'm going to keep preaching it. I've always said Bob Matthews died for our sins. If we'd have done what we should have done, and what the right wing should have done, there would have been no need for Bob Matthews to do what he did. The right wing betrayed Bob Matthews, so he struck out in the only way he could. know, I've got some other notes, but I put them in another pocket, and I got so damn many pockets here, I couldn't find them. The conservatives condemn socialism. And I've heard a lot of guys who claim to be racist condemn socialism. But they say they're Nazis. Well, you can't condemn socialism and be a national socialist. Because if Hitler was anything, he was a socialist. He wasn't a capitalist, he wasn't a communist. He was a socialist. Well, you can use the word populist. You got to look back in our history the way it was with working men back at the turn of the last century when they were working them 20 hours a day and putting kids on the in the mills and so forth. Little kids are 12 years old. Who was it fought to get that 18 or that 8-hour day and all that, the labor movement? It came out of populism and it came out of the left. If it had been up to the conservative right, it has still been working 25 hours a day for minimum wage, and that's what they're putting you back in now. It's come full circle. The conservative guys are in power, the Republicans in power, and your wages are going down, your jobs are disappearing, they're letting all the non-whites come in, and yet they'll get people out there running after the Republican Party. Of course, the Democrats are in on it, too. You ought to watch some of the old movies like the Molly Maguires and Matt Twan, and one of my favorites is Fist with Stallone. Did you ever see Fist? Rent that movie, Fist, and you'll see what it was like when your grandfathers or your great-grandfathers were trying to get someplace. If this is not a white working class struggle, racist, it's nothing. Because your white leaders have totally abandoned you, just like the right wing abandoned Robert Matthews. And you're either going to have to stand on your own as white working people and fight for your interests against the multinationals and the very rich of this country, or you're going to lose. They say all the time, well, you're starting class warfare. You're absolutely right. I'm starting class warfare. And there's a class of these people in this country that I would hope to exterminate at some time in the future, and hopefully it's sooner than later. So anyhow, the dream of Bob Matthews goes on. It never ended. Like all this kind of evolution of politics, it seems like it's laying low, but it's changing. This struggle has changed tremendously since the 70s, when we were all John Birch types and conservatives and like that. And it started changing just about the time Bob Matthews made his move. And I said at that time, we can never go back. We can never go back to what it was before. This is a new day. And we have to find our friends where we can find them. If the Muslims attack Washington, D.C., that's fine. Go. If Aslan attacks Washington, D.C., let him go. My enemy, the enemy of my enemy, is my friend, at least for a little while. With a breakdown in this country, I want you to learn everything you can for what you see in Iraq. Don't watch the Zog troops over there. Watch the Iraqis. They're fighting a brilliant resistance war in Iraq.
That's the way we're going to have to fight.
It's going to be fought that way in this country, too, at one point or another. And I don't want to see any white guy go over there in American uniform get killed. I talk to these Marines every day and try to talk them out of it. but by the time they get them brainwashed, they're into it. But when you see an American soldier over there with 70 pounds of equipment on his back, a flak jacket on, helmets on, radios on, and everything else, and you see an Iraqi running down the street with nothing but a t-shirt, a pair of pants, and a machine gun with bandoliers around him, he is a revolutionary, and those kind of people will ultimately win. Zog will not win in the Middle East. They will waste all those billions of dollars, but they'll never win. The British tried it, and they failed. In the meantime, we keep saying, don't stockpile weapons. Don't give the Fed some reason to come snooping around and raiding your house. If there's anybody with drugs, get away from them. Get them out. And just be plain white working people and be as good a person in the community as you can without denying your racial views. I walk around my community, I've been there 36 years, and I have contacts all over the community. They all know what I believe in. I talk to these people every day. They don't run me out. They don't condemn me. Some do behind my back. I get along with people. That's what you have to do. Like Mao Zedong said, you got to swim in the sea of the people if you're going to be a revolutionary type. You got to be able to move in society and listen and have people in key positions and cater and recruit people. And recruit's not a good word, but get with people, network with people who are in good positions, who are like our spies. You're behind enemy lines, don't you know that? That government hates you. They'll do anything to get you out of the way. Now, more just as a nuisance. But they're afraid it could maybe develop into something. And it will. But if you act stupid, you're not going to make it. And if you think it's more important to run around with symbols all over you and front yourself off, you're not going to make it. You can't be a good revolutionary soldier if you wear your uniform everywhere. You can't be a spy and wear your uniform into where you work. You got to be cool. You got to be as deceptive as the kites. You got to outsmart them. I got to give credit to the Jews. They are sneaky bastards, man. But you got to become sneaky bastards. There's only one morality, and that is to win. Win at all costs. And use almost any method you have to use to win. You know, I addressed the Black Panther Party. I got a standing ovation at the Black Panther Party a few years ago. Why? Because I didn't stand there talking about what we disagreed on. I concentrated on, we hate the government just as bad as you. We're separatists. And most of these people, the blacks, respect that. When they rioted in L.A., I said, fine, burn the goddamn place down. We'll even supply you with the gas. Burn the federal building. And when you get done, go to Beverly Hills and burn the Jews out. We won't lift a finger to stop you. Just don't go into the white working class neighborhoods, because then we'll have to kill you. That's the way you got to start thinking, and quit telling people, I would never be violent. Quit telling people that. Of course, anyone can be violent. I can be violent. You can be violent. These guys in the right wing go around, well, we're not violent, no. We would never disobey the law. Oh, we sort of respect the government. They're a little wrong, but if we vote for the right guy, he'll get right. But you cannot be never violent. I love it when my enemy says he'll never be violent. If a guy sitting there in a house with a pot of gold and says he'd never be violent, I'm just going to go in and take his gold. We got to think streetwise. And I think most of you guys know something about being streetwise. There's some very good things that have happened in this country. We're close to a certain type of economic collapse. That's good. You see, I have the attitude that Lenin wrote about, and he was a tremendous tactician. Lenin, the communist. Hitler borrowed a hell of a lot off Lenin. If you'll read his books, you'll see he did. Worse is better for now. Worse is better. When the conservative looks at the paper and says, I laugh. Is it wonderful? Oh, we're running out of oil. That's good. The dollar's going down a tube. That's good. We're running out of water. Oh, that's good. Anything that leads to chaos is on our side. Anything that leads to the weakening of the central government in the United States and Great Britain and South Africa and Australia is good. But the right wing and the conservative type races, they've always thought, well, every time a conservative cries, we should cry too. Baloney! You got no more than 20 years until there's an oil collapse. And then, boy, all bets are over. Then you can bring out all those guns and you'll have a lot of fun. Because nothing will be moving. China's holding $2 trillion in U.S. bills and bonds. If China happened to decide to go stabilize on the euro dollar, the United States would collapse in 24 hours. Even the best economic experts are saying we are close to a meltdown in this country. That's good. Worse is better. You can't possibly win if Washington is strong. And the Iraqi war is going to help us a lot. Because they're talking about these 1,000 or 2,000 wounded guys coming back. Wounded, that's sort of a nice word when you get your legs and arms blown off. They're just wounded. And a certain percentage of them are going to come back here really pissed off, like McVeigh, like Louis Beam, and a lot of people recruited from the Vietnam era. And some of them, of course, were in the order. I'm not saying you're going to recruit them all, but they're going to be hell to pay. And when the left start marching in the streets, I love to see 10,000 leftists marching in the streets because I'm going to go march with them. I've been waiting on them, but they haven't done it yet. But when they do, it's not going to be like Vietnam where we went out and fought them in the streets. But then towards the latter part of the war, we said, this war is bullshit, and we didn't attack them anymore because it was a bad war. These people down here demonstrating against the war today, if I'd had a little time, I was going to get out and march with them. You don't have to tell them you're a racist or a Nazi. Just march with them. Make some contacts. I know Bob Matthews would be happy to hear this kind of talk. Bob Matthews was tired of hearing the tired, old, conservative, right-wing, reactionary crap that just made the rich guys happy and kept these guys meeting in their little rooms, having their donuts and saying, someday we're going to change things. So I hope we're turn out to be as good a people as he was. I hope we turn out to be as committed as he and his followers are, and all the men that are doing the hard time in prison. I think out of the people who are involved today, there's a percentage that will be there when the real crap hits the fan. But a lot of us are going to, there'll be mistakes. Some of us will go to prison. You've got Patriot Act 2, which probably could end up trying to stop my freedom of speech, because my kind of speech doesn't make them too happy. But we got to be willing to go that route. And if we have to kill, we will kill. There's sure a lot of killing that needs to be done, but we don't want to do it for silly reasons, not aim way down low. I keep telling people, why, if you're going to spend life in prison, why you want to kill some nigger on a street corner? Go for the big boys. Reminds me of one time I was tracking George Bush Sr. You got to practice these things. I tracked him in Escondido. He was giving a speech. And I realized how incompetent the government is, and the FBI, the famous but incompetent, they're the most incompetent. I got within 3 feet of George Bush Sr. He was president of the United States. I said, there's no security here. This is all BS. I mean, I walked through all these agents right up. They had a string of veils around. Only the party faithful were supposed to be inside those veils. I just slowly slithered into the party faithful, and I walked up, and pretty soon I'm right there. Here comes George, and he's right here, and he's passing on just like this man here. And there he was. I said, hi. Ever watch The Wizard of Oz? The Great Oz, what did he turn out to be? Just a guy with a crank and blowing smoke and had a big face. That's Washington. The guy that plowed the damn plane into the World Trade Center lived about an hour's drive from me. And while the FBI were all following Alex Curtis around for putting up papers on telephone poles, here was the guy getting ready to plow into the World Trade Center, and they had an FBI informant living in the same building. Are you really afraid of those kind of people? You don't have to be afraid of them. Just act intelligently. We have more collective brain power than they do. And they're getting paid heavy for it. If their paycheck stops, how long do you think they would go to work? How long do you think an FBI man would go to work if he didn't get a check? Would he work for nothing like we do? No. So don't be worried too much about those people. About their pay now, the FBI, we may be recruiting a few of them. We may be able to pay them more than they're getting now one of these days, because they're really griping about their pay being too low. Well, anyhow, that's about it. I told the boys I had a clip of a tape. I wasn't able to bring it up with me to where we were on the scene not long after the shootout here on Whidbey Island, John and I, and Carl Strait, and I think there was somebody else, I don't remember who it was. We came onto this property in the middle of the night, snuck onto the property, and we had the headlights of the car to light us up. Everything was all charred and all the, you know, the leftover from the building. We had a little ceremony right there in the middle of the night. And I'm going to get that tape. We're going to put it on the internet, probably. And so I've been here 3 or 4 times, I guess. And someday the whole story will be told, but I can't tell it now, okay? Thanks a lot.